bing, bing, bing.
Put down that cowbell and let's just.
That was a nice opening from the Faith Healers. This is Open Source as Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFR.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. And joining me is...
Scotty Hertz here to say the night is a wonderful time to listen to Open Sources here on CFRU. Huh?
Beep, 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 beep!
So we need those effect buttons. Go beep, boom.
We need to go full Zook.
We will lose 8 listeners that way, but it's okay.
Out
We've
of
lost
nine.
8 listeners just sitting here right now.
Oh, yeah. They're waiting to hear the news.
They're like, where's that band? Bring those guys back.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. And you can listen to us live online as well. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can hear us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Now today we look at Kinder Morgan's not-so-thinly-veiled threat about not building the Trans Mountain Pipeline and the political earthquake it has caused. Would they really pull out? And what would the consequences be? And then Toronto is looking to follow the lead of other Ontario municipalities and enact some restrictions on payday lenders. Is it about time, or are these businesses simply misunderstood? And then finally, Doug Ford, definitely misunderstood, but maybe deeply misunderstood. As we get close to the election, we'll talk about how the media should cover such a man, and we'll have the latest PC problems. And those have an open sources connection, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yikes. but first, serious topic. Syria. Bashar al-Assad seems to have again used chemical weapons, not entirely confirmed, but it seems like the French have evidence, and there was a report a couple hours before showtime that the U.S. has blood samples that a nerve toxin was used against civilians. This was just outside Damascus on the weekend, and there's been a lot of saber-rattling all week. We've had U.S. President Donald Trump to take an unusual step and hold the... Sorry, I have to swallow.
He's still recovering from the ailment, right? Is
that the ailment of Donald Trump being elected president of the United States.
Yeah.
He took the unusual step and held Russia accountable. And he's been promising new and fresh and clean and smart missiles would soon rain down on Bashar al-Assad and warning Russia to stay out of the way. And why are you supporting such an animal? And if you've been kind of watching sort of the ebb and flow of Trump and his foreign policy, he makes these sort of grand pronouncements on Twitter. Actually, this is on any subject, really. You know, Trump makes these grand pronouncements, and then very quickly people in the administration start walking them back. And that's indeed what's happened today, because Secretary of Defense Mattis, and this is according to the New York Times, took pains to walk back, and that's the exact quote, took pains to walk back Trump's statements about an imminent missile attack, because even Trump admitted today that there's still no plan. And that also came through Twitter, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, Donald No Filter Trump, and Twitter is probably the worst tool in that guy's hands, just because it's, what were the missiles? Nice, new, and smart. It's like, oh, yep. you're going to, yep. And the thing is,
checks out.
Yep. Yeah, he makes a bit of a point, like, we're Assad, definitely not one of the good guys, let's say. Now, I'm not sure if it was 100% proven that it was the Syrian government lobbying the chemical weapons. Not a confirmed. Maybe the French evidence will suggest otherwise. And this is pretty much the Security Council fighting, not fighting amongst itself, but Russia is on it, who veto everything generally. We've got the U.S. And then I don't know if it's quiet diplomacy necessarily, but UK have sent some submarines into the area. They're in range. I just saw that this afternoon. And France, as you said, were the ones that have proof, presumably, that Assad was the one, the Assad regime, were the ones that launched the chemical weapons. Yeah, and this is, like, the whole arc of the Donald Trump tweets this week. He went from, yes, this is going to happen, to, like, backpedaling so rapidly, right? And then it's, well, you know, I might not ask, what did he say? He went into something about, I never said when, I never said why, right. And where is our thank you, America?
That was
for defeating ISIS.
Yeah.
It goes from, we're going to bomb you, Syria, to, no, you know what? Where's our thanks in this?
The whiplash is worse than that, because last week he was pontificating about pulling all U.S. support out of Syria. And a number of people have pointed this out. This comes from the man who said, you know what, we're not going to telegraph. That's what Obama's big mistake is, telling everybody to know what we're going to do.
All he does.
Yeah.
Or at least he does, and then it turns out that it might not be true, but...
Well, I mean, it's almost worse because there's no follow through. I mean, if at least there's follow through. And the thing about the thank you America comment is like, I'm not sure. And I wish somebody in the press corps would ask the press secretary about this. It's like, what is the substantive difference between Pentagon policy under Trump and the policy that was being executed in regards to ISIS under Obama? Because I don't think there's been any. I don't think there's been any massive shift in strategy or what's that military term, combat points of combat, or the terms of combat. I can't remember what I'm trying to say, but you know what I mean.
The rules of engagement.
Engagement.
Is that what you're looking for?
That's okay. Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I in a lot of ways, the U.S. and Syria, I think, is kind of on autopilot. It's just sort of the self-maintaining. They have 2,000 troops there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing it last week, which was what was weird. And then I looked it up, and of course, Huckabee Sanders commented on it as well. She had said that, the Syrian mission is coming to a rapid end. And Trump was, I think he asked them to wrap it up. Like, can we get out of Syria now? Mm-hmm. And then, boom, we're not out of Syria. The challenge for the U.S. So the problem with these airstrikes is that when the U.S. had done this about a year ago, the same thing is like, we're going to have airstrikes on the bases.
Almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah. They just move all the planes out of the way, to send them to a Russian air base or somewhere out of the way. Bombing happens. People die that aren't necessarily belligerents, let's say.
Mm.
And it sounded like this week was going to be a rerun. And thankfully, it's not going to happen, at least that we know of yet. The missiles might be on their way as we sit here, and we wouldn't know. But and it's amazing the black humor that came out this week. It's like, so are we going to expect World War III tomorrow or what? But that's Trudeau came out and said that Canada will not participate.
The royal we
will not participate. I think it's probably because our museum piece jets probably couldn't hack it more than anything. But it's like, let the UK with their subs, the French with their tactical weapons as well, and the U.S., a.k.a. pretty much the Security Council, the permanent members of the Security Council, versus Russia, another permanent member of the Security Council. So the U.N. is chiming in, though. I think that was the Swedes had come up with a plan.
Yeah.
Specifically to try and disarm again, it seems, because if I understood it right, all those years ago, there were no more chemical weapons in Syria, wherever they come from. Who knows?
Yeah.
So at least, yeah, trust the Swedes to try. As to whether anything will come of that, it remains to be seen. But they keep saying there's no chemical weapons, and then they keep showing up.
Right.
What the hell?
Well, it's certainly not rebel factions using chemical weapons.
No, and I thought the rebel factions said this weekend they were going to get out.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much conflicting stuff coming out of this. It's like they said, we will clear out. And then all of a sudden it's this, right? So Duma. Duma's the city? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then on top of all that, there was this meeting last week between Russia, Iran, and Turkey that where they were planning the future of Syria without the United States, which is kind of, damning in terms of U.S. leadership, because, you know, there is a U.S. stake there. There's certainly a stake in terms of defeating ISIS and certainly the effect on world security, in that you have Iran and Russia, to varying degrees, bad actors on the world stage, against and then Turkey, supposedly a NATO ally, doing this without U.S. involvement. I mean, that's pretty, and it was used today. In Mike Pompeo, who is the designate Secretary of State, one of the senators questioning him put up this picture of the three presidents meeting last week, and he said, "What's wrong with this picture?" And Pompeo was like, "I don't know." And he was like, "Well, there's no U.S. representative here talking about the future of Syria," and that's pretty alarming that these three could just feel okay just cutting America out, and it's not no big thing. And that might all be tied back to Trump's comments last week about, let's get out of there. I'm saying, let's get out of there. And I'm always asking him, like, why are we still there? And which is, I wonder if almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, like how well-timed was this on Assad's part, launching a chemical gas attack, you know, the week after Trump is, like, pontificating about leaving Syria. Like, it seems like kind of an FU to Trump. It's like, okay, you want to get out? Here's what I'm going to do. See ya. Which is, of course, exactly what Trump warned about when he was on the campaign trail. Like, you tell them you're going to leave, and they're going to wait until you leave, and then do all sorts of bad stuff when you're gone.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, really, as to the whole, you know, no one has any idea where Trump's going to stand at any given time. And then, of course, as you said, his people come out and say, no, anyways. I've often wondered whether it's, you know, somebody else in the White House, mm-hmm. not necessarily one of the executive branch, or like very quietly whispering in his ear. I think it might be Ivanka or someone. It's like, you know, Dad, you might want to tone it down a bit. I don't think he does it on his own. You know, I really don't think he's able to pull back on his own. And he doesn't seem to like listening to people, right? No. That's becoming very clear as I'm working my way through Fire and Fury, unless they're buttering him up.
Yeah.
Or family. Those are the two choices, right? So,
well, it was also rumored that Ivanka was the one who encouraged him to take action last year after the gas attack. That it was her leaning
on
him.
Yeah, so it's quite possible that he's, you know, the same thing now. It's like, oh, Daddy, maybe you shouldn't. Which is kind of scary from a sort of world, you know, geopolitical, let alone, you know, any perspective. It's like, what, the daughter? Well, you know, this is all alleged, folks. I'm just pontificating here.
But I mean,
I'm
it's scary
sure,
to think that the same sort of thing that, you know,
that's the foreign policy.
Yeah,
the daughter.
That the foreign policy is being at the run in the same way as when you take your kid to the store and she starts crying about, you know, wanting a chocolate bar and you get
your
her
kid's
a Kinder 70 egg.
Years so, old.
Right. That's kind of the feeling is that, you know what, to shut her up, I'll do A. And that's kind of the way foreign policy is being run. It's like, okay, Ivanka, if you stop talking to me about this, I'll totally launch a few missiles. Okay.
Or I won't. It depends on the day, right?
Depends.
On the mood and the times. So, yeah, it's I'm not sure what's going to come of this. It's one of those, like, because how many times? So we say this every time we talk about Syria. Since this show's been on, the previous show, it's like Syria comes up. It's just an absolute
disaster. This has been running
disaster.
Since the last show, since we started
seven?
The last show.
Is it 7 years
yeah.
now?
Hmm. This has spanned two shows.
So, I mean, fortunately, there are things in place that don't necessarily bypass Trump. But if I understand it right, there is still a hotline. We think of the old-fashioned red phone between Moscow and Washington. There is the equivalent in this situation between, and I'm not sure where the bases are. I think the Americans are in Qatar and wherever the Russians are based mm-hmm. out of. There is a line of communication there. That I guess occasionally gets shut down depending on the times and the mood of either of the players, not the main players, but just the U.S. and Russia in particular. So at least the people on the ground that are there are having discussions rather than, you know, all this coming from the White House bedroom on Twitter. So that is a little bit reassuring, not completely, because the president's say obviously would override anything that's going on the ground there. That's the most frightening part, I think.
Well, it remains to be seen how reassuring it is because we have Pompeo queuing up at the State Department. He's a hawk. We have Bolton now at the National Security Council. He's a big hawk. And we have, you know, we still have Mattis, who seems to be reasonably independent and certainly has not, had to deal with the ire of Trump. He's actually managed to skate pretty free considering every other cabinet person's been in hot water. It's actually fairly interesting. I don't know if it's because his nickname's Mad Dog and Trump's like, I can't take off Mad Dog.
I need Bad Dog on my side.
Yeah, I didn't want to be on Bad Dog's bad side. It could, I mean, that
until
could
they all get fired and you replace them with, like, I don't know, Chuck Norris and somebody else, right?
Goodness gracious. I'm almost surprised we have not heard Secretary of Defense Chuck Norris floated yet. I mean, he did do like five of those missing in action movies.
He did kill off communism, according to that film on Netflix.
That was a good film. I mean,
it was a good film.
It was a good film.
So that would make him a contender in Trump's world, I think.
It's unclear how much influence exactly Chuck Norris personally had in ending the Cold War. But, I mean, he did kick a McDonald's and turn it into a Burger King. so hard. He kicked the McDonald's so hard it turned into a Burger King.
It's like Silk Purse Sow's ear, eh? So, yeah. Maybe not that much of a stretch, but...
No, but yeah, it's frightening that there's kind of like no good options here. And I think it was on one of the news shows the other day. They kind of broke down. It's like kind of three piles. You can either do nothing and, you know, let the situation play out. You can do some sort of limited action like they when they bombed that airstrip last year. Or you can look... do something bigger, knowing that you're going to maybe hit Iran and maybe hit Russia, who are in country, and then that's going to start a bigger conflict, or that's going to like heat up the whole region and heat up the whole situation, because now you're not just fighting Assad, you're also fighting Iran and you're fighting Russia. Not that people aren't kind of fighting Russia as it is.
And then the periphery of the Israelis and whoever
that brings power. In the Israelis, and it's, you know, it turns into a much bigger, uglier mess. But I mean, that's the nuance of modern foreign affairs, and unfortunately Trump is not a man who does nuance well.
No
matter what you think of him, he is not a nuanced man.
Although he would say himself, I am the most nuanced.
Probably.
I invented nuance.
Probably,
I've known nuance a long time, and he's a good guy.
When you spend a year and a half kissing Putin's butt, and then you wake up Sunday morning and go like, my missiles are coming for you, bro. You better watch out.
That's about it, bro.
You know what?
You better duck, bro.
Yeah.
It's like we've had too many cocktails at the party. Now we're going to go at it.
Yeah,
and
maybe
fall into the pool.
That's it. It's like you've been drinking with. I'm not that Trump knows anything about this because he's a total lightweight. But he. It's like they were drinking at the bar all night, and then around 1 a.m. they start getting over who the best Leafs goalie is, and then it becomes a fist fight in the parking lot.
Oh, I don't know. I was gonna say I believe Trump is on something. We're not sure what, but is it just sheer power?
Maybe
Big Macs. He's on Big Macs. Diet Coke.
It's 12 Diet Coke.
Or is it? Yeah. It's the Diet Coke, I think.
Anyway. Speaking of stuff you shouldn't drink, that was a bad segue.
It's perfect.
Kinder Morgan, the Trans Mountain Pipeline. You remember a few weeks ago, Elizabeth May was arrested for standing there, yeah. Pretty much, as Trans Mountain completed some initial work. That they had to finish on deadline by the end of March before the birds start migrating. And now, a couple of weeks later, they're saying, well, you know what? We're going to stop all work until we get this thing figured out with BC. BC is, of course, standing in the way of further development of the Trans Mountain expansion. Alberta is fighting mad and have asked Ottawa to suspend transfer payments to British Columbia until, you know, they, you know, let Alberta truck in their dirty oil. And then some people are saying, you know what? Maybe Trudeau should go so far as invoke the Emergency Act. And if you don't know what the Emergency Act is, it is the act that replaced the War Measures Act. So this is what one person on Huffington Post was suggesting, that Trudeau should enact the War Measures Act and make Trans Mountain a point of national concern to get her done. And
Wasn't Jason Kenney.
That was not Jason Kenney. It was like, yeah.
Because Jason Kenney's gone all socialist on this. Eh? It's like, yeah, we should own it.
Yeah.
I normally don't believe in public ownership, but this is the exception.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was bizarre. I mean, it's almost
bizarre. It is bizarre, but
it's bizarre how simpatico Kenny and Notley have been on this, because
almost shocking when you hear
Kenny got up Notley. And says, oh, I think the premier should have Ottawa stop all transfer payments until BC does things our way. And Notley's like, already done, Kimosabi. and Kenny's
that's a direct quote. That's exactly
good,
what she said.
But it's your fault for not getting this done in the first place.
And score the political point after.
But it's also bizarre seeing a lot of these Alberta conservatives get riled up. And it's like, well, you guys had the Alberta legislature for 40 years. Harper had the federal government for 10 years.
Yeah.
You had the BC Liberals, who are basically conservatives in power in BC for
pretty much.
They're Linos. You know, so you had this like lineup for a decade where you could have gotten this done and it didn't get done. And now you're like, we got to get this done in a month. Like, that's not, I mean, Trudeau,
hurry up.
Trudeau is bleeding massive lefty brownie points trying to to get this move forward. And I don't think it's so far as, like, somebody said earlier this week that, oh, yeah, this has to get done or he's done. And I would not go that far, because pretty much every pundit prediction about Trudeau's fate has never come about. But at the same time, Trudeau is, you know, losing a lot of political cred sticking his neck out for this, or has the potential to lose a lot of political cred sticking his neck out for this, because there are a lot of people who do not want him to make this like a hill to die on.
No, I mean, all the necks are out for sure.
Yeah.
Trudeau swears by his Haida tattoo that it will be built through the traditional territory. Horgan says he's keeping his election promise, and I suppose Notley is as well. But it's weird that you've got NDP versus, well, NDP backed by Greens. I don't think that's the only exclusive reason why the BC NDP are holding out on this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and just for airtime, I saw that Trudeau has arranged a meeting with the premiers on Sunday. This is another story that's got that 1 week-long arc where the fighting is usually like right Wednesday or whatever. And then by the weekend, Trudeau is going to at least try and play peacemaker. But
he's coming back early from the Summit of the Americas to do it.
Paris? Is it in Paris?
It's in Peru.
Lots of flying around. And then back on, I don't know whose oil is fueling the planes. is it Canadian? I don't know. So the battle royal to the West. I can't remember who made the point. I thought it was one of the better points, was that if this is in the national interest and you have to do emergency measures and everything that's been mentioned, why is like a Texas company building it, right? Why would the some people may remember, or those who follow history, that there was a similar argument in the 1950s about a pipeline which in effect got rid of the Liberal government of the day and installed Diefenbaker. Right. And it actually brought the government down. I don't think, as you were saying about Trudeau and the brownie points, I don't think this will necessarily bring the Trudeau Liberals down. But I also think that it's wishful thinking to think that it won't get built. I mean, regardless of my opinion on it, pipelines are federal jurisdiction. So whatever, people are mentioning all these things that they can do and, you know, stop the money from flowing and do this and do that and pretty much, you know, grab them by the neck, let's say, whatever, and say, you know, we're just going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It will get done. And they have put all of these conditions on, like you say, the migratory birds. I can't, it was a ton, wasn't it? Was it not like hundreds of conditions?
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Kinder Morgan is throttling back and saying, well, you know what, if this doesn't get sorted out, we're just going to say no. But I don't think they will.
One of the things I find curious is, how can they say, like, we're going to pull out? I mean, isn't that where the oil... I mean, it's not like you want
it's anywhere
a Quickie
else.
Mart, right? No. Where you can open a Quickie Mart anywhere. This is where the oil is, so how can you pull out? I mean, I know there's oil in lots of different places.
Yeah.
But there's a reason you were building here in the first place. The other thing is, yeah, the Texas investors, I'm wondering how much is this a ploy, because they're saying, well, the investors are running out of money, so they have to know how long this is going to take to sort all this out. And it feels like high sales pressure tactics.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely go or get off the pot, Canada. Right.
Right. So I wonder how much of this is like really in danger, when if this is not sorted out by the end of May, they're going to go, okay, well, how about till June? Because, you know, there's... You know, we were on vacation for half of it because Victoria Day long weekend or whatever.
That's right. Those union people won't work.
And then the fascinating, to go back to pieces that we read and forgot where they were. I read a piece where somebody was like, "Does nobody in Alberta remember when Trudeau Senior created the National Energy Board?" And this was like the original sin of Eastern Canada elitism in the 1970s that made people like curse everyone named Trudeau for like seven generations. Like, it won't be till like 2525 someone in Alberta will vote for a Trudeau again. And here we are again, and you have Jason Kenney and all these people screaming at the moon, like, Trudeau, like, make them do it. Make them build it, Trudeau. What's the point of federal authority if you can't make people build pipelines? That's not an accurate Jason Kenney impression, but it's close.
It's really close.
But it's so...
You need a tie that's too tight around your neck.
Oh, mercy. I hate that. But it's just crazy to me that... you know, here we are that the Alberta oil proponents are sort of like begging Trudeau to like use federal force. My question in all this is, Horgan's not dumb.
No, definitely not.
He has to know that this situation ends with that thing getting built. I mean, yeah, what you said, ideally, we would leave it alone, leave the crud in the ground.
Yeah. I said that, you know, regardless of anyone's opinion, I think it's going to get built. I don't think that they've put a ton of restrictions on it now. And I know none of that stops it from leaking because it's going to leak.
Yes.
It will leak somewhere.
It will, yeah.
And the sad part is if it does leak in the whale breeding grounds or whatever, you know, by
hopefully
that,
not.
No, but when it's I told you so, and part of the problem with it, too, is that I think I talked about this before, that the pipeline goes to the coast. Once it's in a tanker, that's nothing to do with pipeline people. It's a shipping company, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Lac-Mégantic grade, and we know how well that went. But
the point is, like, what does Horgan want? What can he get out of the situation that he can consider a win? Because it's not just a win for, like, BC and legitimate BC concerns about environmental damage, but it's also about not honking off the three green-colored people who sit in his caucus,
yep,
whose support he depends on in order to not have to go to an election again. That's the big what if in all this.
Yeah, and also I think we talked about this before too, how Horgan and company are throwing it all in on liquid natural gas. So mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and I believe they still ship a good quantity of coal out of BC.
Probably
to China, I believe. I'm not sure certain on that.
Almost, I just
know
definitely
that coal,
certainly to China.
Yes. It's just right there. It's just over there. Go right there. A lot of this too rides on the of course the price of oil, and as we know, tar sand oil in particular is really difficult to extract. Costs a lot. In fact, I read one article that was saying that, you know, there's almost no point right now in anybody starting a green field, meaning like from scratch tar sands operation. So as we know, Kinder Morgan have been in the business for a long time. And I guess what's the number these days is like $60. $60 is not the price of oil. I think it's up to $67. $60
is up to 72 the other day.
Is it? Yeah, it's just with everything that's going on with our previous story in Syria. Syria,
yeah, that's what was driving
Iran
down,
as a player.
Yeah.
Russia being a player. Venezuela is a basket case right now in terms of anything getting oil or anything out. So the price is going up. So I'm not sure if that's part of it too. And we, you know, it fluctuates so much. But
right, they want to.
If
strike.
It goes sky high, they're gonna be like, man, we should be shipping all of this.
If the indicate, yeah, if the. That's they're looking at the futures, right? And if the indication is that the price is going up, they want to have the pipeline ready to start, you know, to turn the taps on and start collecting the money, which is great. That's what Alberta wants. That's what Rachel Notley wants, because it could only help her in re-election hopes.
The accidental government, as Jason Kenney calls it.
Jason Kenney should be the last person to talk about accidents. Anyway, I know it's almost like an accident. He's in,
well. This is
anyway.
Just a quick point before the bottom of the hour. When he ran for the leadership, he raised a lot of money.
Yeah,
and my guess would be, and this is just my opinion, that where did the money come from? You have to wonder, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm doing that whole, you know what I heard, but I think it's true that cash has to come from somewhere. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why he's so vociferous in his defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rachel, I don't know. Rachel. We're on a first name basis. Rachel. It's like friends. Provincial friends.
Provincial
Rachel,
friends.
I don't know. So an evolving story, of course, and we will keep you posted for sure on the next chapter of Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain or Trans Mountain Trans Morgan.
Kinder Morgan Trans Mountain
yes,
Pipeline.
Indeed.
Elizabeth May.
What he said.
Still is awaiting the final disposition in court, by the way. Anyway, it's not stopping her from being in town on the 21st, next Saturday.
With what? Sarah Harmer and David Suzuki? Do
Sarah
Harmer. Right?
It's the Green Day Green Celebration.
Green Day? They're calling it Green Day?
No, well, they should call it Green Day because it is Earth Day.
Earth Day.
But they should call it Green Day. And see what happens. But yeah, she's
going to
be in town. Yeah, I'll probably
go. You going?
Yeah, I'll probably go. It's also the NDP's naming its nominee that day, so that's going to be a fun day.
Oh, well, we could. I'll go to one. You go
it's
one.
Also Doors Open Guelph Day. and, you know, environmental clean up.
You can't drive anywhere. You got to take the bus, right?
Well, yeah.
Well,
leave
the Cadillac at home there.
I will.
It's a little toy Matchbox Cadillac.
By Cadillac, you mean my old Zeller's bike. Yeah. Aww. I still have a Zeller's bike.
What's the story there?
Not really. I just still have it. We're going to take a break after that diatribe. We're going to take a break and come back with some more news. And you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
I'm good for nothing when I'm not with you. We started something we didn't choose. All or nothing, too good to lose. And all or nothing is all I know. And I'm good for nothing without you, so we started something we can't control. All or nothing, I'm gonna call.
Yeehaw! That was John Coman, who is playing Kazoo Fest tonight. I should mention that John Coman is not an exclusively country artist. However, he covers all the bases on this CD. The CD is called I Need Love. Oh, how nice. So we'll be playing Kazoo Fest tonight, the 10C Shared Space, doors 7. Tickets are $10. One of the sponsors is CFRU, among others. Luca at 8:30, John Coman at 9:30, and our very own Bird City. Well, not all of them, but Jenny Mitchell's Bird City. I think they're just Bird City, but anyway. We've played them on the show before as well. We'll be playing tonight. Kazoo Fest going all weekend. Kazoo.ca.
It's kazooing all over the place.
Everything you need to know. So
just look, just look for the cat with an eye patch.
Always a good time. So I'll be there tonight. If you see me, say hi. But you don't know what I look like because I'm on the radio. You'll know which guy. You'll know who it is.
Your picture's all over the place.
Is it really?
As is mine.
Ugh.
It's not, you're not,
it's
exactly
on the Facebook?
You're not exactly the shadow is what I'm saying.
No, I'm not the shadow. That's a weekend show right there.
Oh shadows. My God. We should totally resurrect the shadow.
Yeah.
Tonight, we should do that.
Kazoo Fest, be there. Do they talk like that? I don't know. Anyway, speaking of talking like something that's...
I feel like it's almost halfway through the show.
It's really clammy in here, folks. You don't know this, but we're sweating buckets.
Speak for yourself. But you know who should be sweating buckets? Payday lenders in Toronto.
Oh, yes.
So there's a staff report coming forward at Toronto City Council that is saying that they should cap the number of payday lenders. There are currently 207 in the city of Toronto, and this is not Toronto isn't the first municipality to decide this. Hamilton and Ottawa are also looking at some kind of action to mitigate the spread and the growth of payday lenders. Some people consider rather predatory that they prey on the vulnerable and people who, you know, cannot find such financial services through banks or through normal means. Other people say it is a registered business and it's best to control and have some kind of registration and some kind of control over these businesses, lest people start going back to the good old days of knee-breaking money. Mm-hmm. Oh, now there's that word again. Money people, money crooks, money launderers. I don't know. Loan sharks. Bingo. This is a good day. Anyway.
The cold men are wearing off.
I think
it's
going back to me. All those cold men, they kept me sharp for all week. Now no, it's just back to regular brain patterns.
But
the point is, I think that, you know, there are more bad stories about payday lenders than there are good stories about payday lenders, and probably a bit of extra regulation wouldn't hurt.
Oh, absolutely. Once you get into the spiral, that's it. There are regulations in other places. Hamilton, as you mentioned, Hamilton are one of the first that have implemented it. Some of the things are the outlet has to pay a license fee. They need to post the annualized interest rate as opposed to, I guess, monthly or other. There's ways to present it where it's like, you're only going to pay this, and they give you a small amount. But it can work out as high as 500, almost 500% when you have the annual amount. There are people, I would hope, that would look at that and say, man, shouldn't be doing that. In Quebec, it's capped at 35%, which I found interesting. Mm-hmm. Credit cards are generally in the early 20s, aren't they?
In terms of
getting a cash advance.
Usually around
22-23%. Which is like, 2-3% a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard through the vine today that the Kashchek in downtown Guelph is gone. I sort of knew it was there. I don't ever recall.
Which one? There's like three of them.
No, it's called Kashchek, right? Oh, okay. The one that's across from Royal Electric, I guess, on right. Macdonnell.
Yeah.
For those of you out of the listening area, where it's very local conversation. But we do have several clusters of payday loan places. Some are down near where I live in the ward, and up near you, there's quite a few, aren't
that's
there?
That's Willow where the Road. Cluster is yeah. the Willow and Silver Creek.
And there's some standalone ones, too. Like, there was that one out in the parking lot by Value Village.
Yeah. I mean, they're up and down Silver Creek between Willow and Speedwell. Yeah.
But these companies say that they don't gather in or build in neighborhoods. Establish themselves in neighborhoods that are poor, and I don't think that's
but
true.
But Guelph is a great example because they so obviously are. Because
yeah, you just need to look at Google Maps, you can see where they are.
And that's what I did. I Googled payday loans in Guelph, and about 10 different locations came up, and they were all clustered around mm-hmm. Silver Creek Parkway, and in Willow, Wellington. Silver Creek, and Speedvale, that kind of and then the rest were downtown. There's
where
not
where you and I live or where they are.
But you know, there's none in the Stoned Road area. There's none at Claire and Gordon. You know, it's very clear who this is meant to design. And of course, there's a number of people who are of limited means who live in a downtown area. A lot of people in the Willow Road area who are new immigrants, and also that's also an area where mm-hmm. there's a lot of working class. So yeah. It's very clearly targeted. And then you can see the Hamilton map, too. Hamilton, it's very located in Ward 2 and 3, which is kind of their downtown area. And then in Hamilton, too, there's one section where along there's like 17 to 20 payday outlets along this one. I think it's Montreal Street.
Yeah.
Again, another area where, you know, people are not as well off as other areas of Ottawa. So it's – and then in – Toronto, you can walk up Yonge Street and pretty much there's one on every block. You know, it's so clearly geared to take advantage of people who, you know, cannot get a savings account.
Oh, for sure. And part of what they've done in Hamilton is they've capped it at 15. So I think is that the existing ones are being grandfathered in, but through attrition, I guess. Once they disappear, it's like there will be no more than 15 of them in Hamilton.
One award. One per ward. That was another thing.
Oh, they were saying they won an award. No, they didn't.
No, there's one per ward.
One per ward, yes. So, which is, you know, fair enough.
It out. Yeah.
I think it was said that there's a glut of them in Ottawa, which is surprising. You think, you know, the land of the civil service and the public service.
Like, I wrote down the number. It was like 70. There's 70 in Ottawa.
70, wow.
And there's 207 in Toronto.
Wow.
70 in Ottawa. And how big is Ottawa? Ottawa isn't even a million people, is it? Maybe with
I don't think so.
Surrounding area.
No, for a capital city, it's definitely underpopulated, but it is Canada, so. Well, no, we're all gathered in the hot dog, and anything outside of it is, you know, from sea to sea.
We're all gathered in the hot dog. That should be on a t-shirt. But, yeah, no.
The band of people. As close to America as possible.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure what the rules are in the States, although I'd heard some places are quite heavy-handed. In Georgia, these don't even exist. It's considered, I don't know if it's because of that biblical usury thing. It's like, you cannot do this. So you cannot get a payday loan in the state of Georgia. And of course, something that doesn't really get talked about, too, are the other options. You'll hear a couple of unions in particular talk about postal banking a lot would be a way to introduce banking to people who are, let's say, on the margins, for lack of a better word. And now down in downtown Guelph, we obviously don't have postal banking. And the credit union, which is another option that's always put forward because you are more likely to be able to establish an account and do some banking at a credit union as opposed to a bank because it's a little bit easier. They're a little bit more, let's say, receptive to people who can't necessarily have a bank account for whatever reason. But yeah, so there are other options out there. But if there doesn't seem to whether these new regs will be a bit of a hammer, and it's interesting too when you said that these are small businesses. This is one of those things like when you're going for small business, you have to defend all the small businesses, I suppose, which includes these guys. So I would really like to see the back of them. I think as a society we fail when there are tons of these places. We're failing in many areas.
It's hard to say they're small businesses, though, because you have Money Mart, which is a chain.
No, they're a chain, but I'm sure it's a franchise, though, right?
I have no doubt it's a franchise.
They talked to that guy who ran like 18 Money Marts or something. He's like a Tim Hortons. It's the Tim Hortons of cashola, right? So, cashola, sorry. I don't know how that came from.
But no, you're right. It's likely a franchise. And I know that, you know, they employ, you know, people and sure. That's fine. But
when there's whining about hard times, it's like, you want to see hard times. Look on the other side of the counter there, man. Like, really? You know, it's...
Well, and there was the one tale of the guy who, like, borrowed $1,400 and ended up owing, like, tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm. Didn't realize what the interest rate was. And I think that's part of it. They have to post the interest rate and say, it's going to be this.
And they also lowered the maximum fee you can charge. It used to be $18 per $100 borrowed, and now it's $15. I'm not sure, you know, if you're borrowing $400, I'm not sure, you know, $60 could is be better than...
Yeah.
$72. But
yeah, it sounds like they're getting hit in lots of ways too. There seems to be an app out there that does auto payment of people who work days or just hours. So rather than have to go to the payday loan place and cash your check, it's just going to go directly into your account and bypassing the middleman completely. So they'll lose.
Well, even at that, I mean, you still have to have a phone with an app on it and have minutes on your phone and data. It's
be more so for
it's tricky, you know, for old people or for new immigrants who don't, you know, maybe understand the system and don't have access to the tech. You know, that's still the payday peeps are still a viable option, and it creates opportunity for hurting the people who are most vulnerable, and it's like you may open like a payday lender thinking, yeah, I'm going to help people and. But at the end of the day...
Yeah, I don't think anybody opens it to help people. I really don't.
Well...
I wish somebody would.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would do it like a microcredit loan place and open it to help people. That probably isn't out of the realm of possibility, is it? But it's doubled in the past...
Yes.
What? 10 years? Gone from...
It's a huge... It's...
1 in 50 people using their services down to 1 in 25. That's significant. So.
Yeah. It's...
It's a growth industry, essentially.
Well, that in dollar stores.
Except, there's a parallel too, probably.
But
except
I mean,
for the cash
stores,
check downtown, folks. So if you use their services, they're gone. But
dollar stores are also deceptive too, because I saw that online. A lot of people saying, "Well, dollar stores are growing too," and it's like, "Well, not so fast," because there are a lot of dollar stores where people have black cards and are using them at the dollar store. So it's dollar stores are kind of different. Dollar stores aren't necessarily a sign of growing inequity. The way the proliferation of cash, payday cash lenders are, but I digress.
And that's your dollar store report for today. Everything is a dollar or two, or sometimes four.
It's between a dollar and four. Well, actually, no, that's not true. It's between 50 cents and $4.
Oh.
A Dollarama anyway, because you can get like candy bars too. Actually, that's not true, because we have some candy bars that if you buy three for a dollar, so that's like 33
cents. I'm coming. That's a really good deal. It's better than Campus.
I'm not sure how good they are. Anyway, they're the zero bars. They're like these like chocolatey... We don't need to go into that. No, the Eatmores are 85 cents.
Zagna.
You're not going to get an Eatmore for 33 cents. This isn't Soviet Russia. Anyway.
Or the Target in Rochester or something. But anyway... Finally tonight, speaking of Zagnut bars, or just
Lord.
Nut bars.
Burn.
Oh.
So Doug Ford, making news in so many ways. We'll get to the philosophical question we wanted to address in a sec. But let's do a rundown of what Doug Ford's week's been like. He missed the first leaders debate last night, which was in the black community in Toronto, talking about issues in that community. He took a powder because he was doing a tour up north where he announced exactly zero policy about northern affairs. He did, however, announce that his first act as premier was going to be firing the CEO of Guelph Hydro, who he has dubbed the $6 million man, in much the same style as somebody else we mentioned on the show would have dubbed somebody. And he was going to fire as well the
Ontario Hydro,
Hydro One.
Oh, Hydro One, okay, yeah.
Hydro One board and CEO.
Six, it is. He's six top million. Of the list, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But Doug's going to fire
better, stronger,
first thing,
faster.
Although it's not exactly clear if he has that ability. Moving on, though.
You just punch him.
The other big thing was if you thought this Me Too stuff and sexual impropriety allegations against PC party members was over, think again. Michael Harris, who was on this show, I think this time last year, we had
the other Michael Harris. Well, there's four. There's four that we know of, and not the journo.
Not the journalist. And not the former premier of Ontario.
And not his son.
Not his son, who's running in Waterloo, but the MPP of Kitchener, Conestoga. Allegedly sent inappropriate text to an intern in 2013. He initially announced on Sunday, I think, Saturday or Sunday, in a press release that he was stepping down due to health reasons. He had some issues in his eye that he was going to have surgery for, wanted to dedicate himself to getting healthy. That may or may not be true, but it turns out the real reason is because somebody sent a letter to the PC office on Friday, and by midnight on Friday, he was out of caucus, and he was not going. His nomination papers for the PC riding in Kitchener-Conestoga were not going to be signed. Brutal turn of events. I mean, he seemed. I mean, we sort of say this about these guys. It's, you know, rarely though do we know the person.
No.
That is, but you know, he did seem, you know, from his media appearances and appearances on this show, fairly. Guy who is interested in public service, but I mean, I think that's also the lesson of these movements too, is that you never know who could be a creep in private.
Well, that's in some ways he's the guy you got to watch, probably, right? Somebody that you know. So we've had Brown, Dykstra, now Harris. Will there be more? I'm not sure. And interestingly, I saw a parallel, not a parallel article, but was talking about Ford, to sort of bring it a little bit full circle on this. And we were going to talk about how the fact that he doesn't have a media bus following him around anymore.
Yeah.
And I saw some of the, just in general, in an article about that, we're talking about some of the things that Doug Ford has called female reporters. Little bitch. A lazy ass. And then there was, he said Cynthia Mulligan was executing a jihadist attack on him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. And that was, so I don't know if any of that is appropriate. And he'll say, well,
Cynthia Mulligan not only sounds like a white woman, she is a white woman, by the way, if you're not familiar with Toronto news personality.
Is it CP24? Or
I believe she's at City.
City. Yes, that's right. So we're talking about, on the one hand, Doug Ford said we have absolutely zero tolerance when he was talking about Michael Harris. And his, what did he call his embarrassing BBM conversation? This sounds like it's a little bit beyond embarrassing. I don't know if he's trying to couch it in softer terms.
He's definitely trying to couch it, because you're not going to get, you know, for doing like a Michael Scott thing and doing a that's what she said joke.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit deeper than that. We haven't seen
the messages
in question, but you're not going to get tossed out of caucus before an election. You're not going to have your nomination papers revoked before, like 3 weeks before an election for an embarrassing joke.
What's weird about this is that I thought that was flagged in 2013. If I read it right, it was like they knew about this and have kind of been sitting on it. And I don't know what brought it to the fore again. You said a letter, so somebody contacted them.
I think the person
said, by the way, do you remember when I mentioned this? Right. And and I take it Michael Harris's wife isn't going to run now. That was the thing. It's like the whole succession. It's like, well, I'm going to run because he's not well.
Right.
I think it's entirely possible that he's not well, but it seems like a heck of a coincidence that one day you're like, oh,
I have eye issues.
And I've had them for years, so why didn't you get them fixed years ago? Right. Eye issues because he couldn't see typing on his BlackBerry to the intern, I guess. No, I have no sympathy for the guy. I really don't. It's really, that's three. And it's not all conservatives. There seems to be a bit of a pattern here. Well, I know some of the allegations have been historical. Dykstra in particular. Brown's were more recent. But again, it's over a period of years. So
right. And it's probably not the only allegations out there.
Yeah.
These are just the ones that came forward, because certainly in Brown's case, there was a lot of people who, when the two allegations were made to CTV News, a lot of people were like, well, knew he was a creep, well, known it for a while. And so people have been talking behind the scenes. It's just, it's not, and I'm sure it might be the same case for Michael Harris.
Speaking of candidates who do questionable things or say questionable things, she's back. Did she ever fully go away? Tanya Allen Granich.
Well, I think this is another one. Someone decided to look at her Twitter profile and her blog and thought, huh, I wonder what Tanya Greg Allen blogs about. And yeah, it's surprising. She blogs about terrible things and has terrible opinions about...
And she was doing some, or trying to do some really good spin as to why she said it. There was the old, I didn't really say that. In actual fact, I said this. One was that women in burqas reminded her of bank robbers and ninjas. Two separate tweets, I think. And it sounds like she's a bit of a ranter. I mean, this is probably to be expected considering her advocacy, let's say. She doesn't like gay marriage too much either.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, I don't think Doug Ford can denounce her outright because she pretty much crowned him, right?
Yeah.
Like, she was the kingmaker in Doug Ford's case, so he can't really go against her. And he was saying stuff like, I don't really support any candidate, per se. It's like, that's pretty much your job. You're going to be doing the rounds.
Your name's on the nomination
papers. You're doing
papers.
The rounds, and the election's on, and you're going to stand there and take the picture that we all see. Probably us more than... you know, the rest of you, in terms of like seeing the glossy photos of the premier or premier designate are in waiting with their candidates. The whole idea is that, you know, it's not like you're the president, it's you're the premier and have a team.
But
he's not endorsing anybody.
But at the same time, his signature's on the nomination form.
Exactly.
So it's literally an endorsement.
Yeah.
You can't say I don't endorse when you have to endorse when that's how people get their name on the local ballots, is that the party leader endorses them.
I don't know
it's
what's
crazy.
Happened to Mississauga, Tanya Allen Granite, or Granitown out of Mississauga Center. Isn't that where she's going to run or planning to run?
Yeah.
The nomination hasn't happened yet, though, is it?
I don't believe so.
She'd be a little bit behind, eh?
Well, a lot of people. There was like
maybe
a couple of weeks
terror.
Ago, there was as many as 20 ridings. We still don't have a PC candidate here. They had a meet and greet last week.
It sounded like they wanted to run a joint candidate from that meet and greet. It's like the picture was like...
But it's a bit bizarre. I did an interview with a young man named Steve Dorgo, who's trying to gather signatures so he can be like a third candidate on the ballot. He's a younger guy. He's 26.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find this on Politico, by the way. And but he was inspired by Doug Ford, and he's very much kind of in the Ford Nation mold. And he made the point that it seems like... The local PCs are going to coast to June 7th. I think this was an actual quote from him. He said, like, we need to make June 7th happen. And what I took from that is, like, you can't just, like, coast on the hate for Kathleen Wynne and for the Liberals and expect to come out quits here. You have to actually put in some effort. And not to be offensive or ageist, mm-hmm. but when you see that picture of Patrick and Ray,
yeah,
they're not saying... That picture doesn't say we're the bright face of the future. No offense to them. They are both very accomplished men who have put their name forward, and that's certainly a brave thing to put your name forward and run for an election.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't really instill confidence. And I don't mean because of their age. It's just sort of the way it was all presented to me.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like, well, here's the guys that we've got. Plus, the other factor we need to consider.
And they held it at a senior center.
Well... Yeah, but which is, they get a good turnout that way, probably, right? So,
captive audience.
The other thing I think in the conservative realm in Guelph is that there's also the Ontario Alliance factor.
Sure.
If I got it right,
yeah.
That he was ex the potential
Thomas Mooney, yeah,
Thomas Mooney candidate in waiting.
Yeah.
Was with the PCs and then left.
Over the Brown thing, and there's
so you'll have some friends in the party still.
There'll be a Q&A with him coming up on Politico too, because I'm a bit behind because of illness last week and sleeping in the middle of the day. But yeah, he was not persuaded by the leadership campaign and Patrick Brown being tossed out, so he's now running for the Ontario Alliance, or the Alliance Party of Ontario, I think is their official name. But they're going to aim to be a proper conservative voice, if I can interpret their mandate. And that party's actually been formed by a lot of disgruntled PCs as well. A lot of people who did not like what Patrick Brown was doing. Oddly enough.
So there's potential for a split there.
Well, I
don't know how massive, but
that's the thing. I do wonder how massive, but it's
depends on the margins.
We didn't really talk about the philosophy of covering Doug Ford. What I will say this is like the whole thing of like not having a press bus. He's doing the Trump thing where he's trying to score points with the base by not kowtowing to the press. But at the same time, there is a fundamental
He's avoiding any confrontation. And
right. He's avoiding having to answer questions because, as we saw with the, like, I'm going to fire the Hydra One people, even though he doesn't entirely know if he can do that, and talking about how he's going to defund the CBC, even though he can't do that. It's,
well,
you know,
it reminded me of that, the Harper campaign, where, I mean, I think I've said this before, that the only candidate that didn't come on the show was Marty Burke, right?
Yeah.
Did he even return your emails, or did he just?
No.
Yeah, he just said, "I'm not even interested." Look how well it worked.
He didn't even say, "I'm not even interested."
No.
I called the office. I sent email after email that I called. This is getting way out of.
No. But it's similar in that he's no press.
But
I don't want any press.
I talked to Michael Sona himself.
Let Pierre Boutin handle the press. Yeah.
And he said, "Oh yeah, we'll totally arrange something. I'll get back to you." And then after calling him for a week, I went down to the office and came. And then Rockside did the same thing for Ballot Box.
The office you couldn't find, that's right.
The blue door. The secret blue door. It was like something out of freaking Ready Player One.
Behind the blue door.
We're going to head out the blue door ourselves.
Yeah, we should.
You can find us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, and you can find us at OS_Guelph on the Twitterverse. You can go to the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean to find the Open Sources podcast, and you can also find it through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scott Hertz on Facebook, Scott Hertz on Twitter. I blog at blogspot.wordpress.com.
There you go.
/.
DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will, of course, be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources stuff. We'll see you then.